This is But You're Wrong. I'm Keith Bodela.
I'm Greg DiNicola.
Welcome, everyone listening out there in podcast land. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/ButYou'reWrong. Twitter, @BYWPodcast. You can listen to us on Stitcher also with your mobile. Check out my books, Work in Progress and Not My Problem, on Amazon. But when you said religion, it made me think of today we stopped off to get gas.
Yeah.
And the car in front of us had two wonderful bumper stickers. The first one said, try Jesus. And then in really small print that you couldn't read unless you were sitting right behind it. Like driving on the highway, all you'll ever read is try Jesus. But underneath it, it said, if you don't like him, the devil will always take you back.
Huh.
And I was like, well, gee, that's kind of presumptuous.
It's a bit presumptuous.
And I was like, frankly, I don't care for your tone in that. But, you know, I'll try to move on. But the other bumper sticker said, don't let the car fool you. My treasure is in heaven.
Huh.
I have no idea what that means.
So, he's got a Cadillac waiting for him in heaven or something?
I don't know. The car was an older model Trailblazer.
Yeah.
Kind of beat up. Man, don't let the car fool you. My treasure is in heaven. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means.
They're a very righteous person, and they want you to know it.
Yeah, but what the fuck does the car have to do with it?
I don't know. Maybe they're trying to push the whole idea of not material possessions, but spiritual beliefs.
Maybe, but they're also kind of implying that the car that they're driving is supposed to be really nice.
Mm.
In which case, then basically what they're telling me is that their treasure in heaven is equal to a beat-up, several-year-old Trailblazer that they're driving around on Earth.
No. They're insinuating that your judgment of their riches is based upon their car. However, their riches are truly with God and the belief that they will have eternal life in heaven. I think that's what they're getting at.
Hmm.
I went to Catholic high school.
Did you really?
I did.
Did you get the shit beat out of you?
No. Why would I get the shit beaten out of me?
Well, my parents both went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
Growing up, and they got beaten by the nuns.
Oh, yeah, but they can't do that anymore. I mean, they yelled at us.
Mm.
Although I never had a nun as a teacher. But the teachers could be mean, and they did yell at us. But they were funny, too. It was nice, because they could say whatever they wanted, and they couldn't get in trouble, because you paid to be there, and they weren't paid by the state. So it really didn't, they didn't give a shit. It was kind of cool.
The nuns didn't give a shit?
No, the teachers in general.
Oh, because the teachers weren't nuns. Because people stopped becoming nuns.
Right, exactly. I think in my entire 4 years there, I want to say I only had one member of the clergy as my teacher. I think I had one priest. Maybe two, but I think I had like a priest as a homeroom teacher once and a priest as a religion teacher once. But of all the teachers I had in 4 years, only twice, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, you would think that they would, kind of be in charge of that shit.
I mean, there were other ones. Maybe I had less than normal. Like, there were there was a couple nuns, or maybe just like two, really. I mean, it was a big school. Like, there was a lot. I mean, there was probably 700 kids in my graduating class.
Wow.
600 to 700. Like, it was a big school. So
that is really big.
Yeah.
Now, did you have to take a religion class?
Yes, I did every year. But it wasn't as like hardline as you think it was. Like, 1 year, I took world religions and I learned about all sorts of, you know, Buddhism, Taoism, Hindu, you know, all that good shit. 1 year I did take scripture, so I read the whole Bible, which I'm actually thankful now because I like knowing what it says. You know, like when people bring shit up and they're like, oh, well, you know, God said this. And I'm like, actually, you know what? I read that book and he never said that. I like knowing it. It comes in handy. Just knowing it and then like being able to reference shit. Mm. Like even if I'm not religious, it's good to know.
Yeah, can you quote chapter and verse of stuff or
no? No. I know the stories and I know I did read the whole thing and I know a lot about it and the history and like the different books and shit. But I don't know any of the verses offhand.
Now, did you catch the M. Night Shyamalan twist ending where Jesus turned out to be a Jew all along?
That was covered up. You're not supposed to know that.
Well, it's out there. What was science class like for you?
Science class was science class. It was very normal. It was exactly the way I'm sure you had it. I took all the regular courses: biology, chemistry, physics,
intelligent design.
Yeah,
how to fake a dinosaur fossil.
No, trust me, we did not take creationism. Actually, my senior year, I got to, because it was pretty strict up through junior year what you had to take for science, but senior year you got to choose whatever the hell you wanted. I took astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking love space. Space is the best. I love knowing about the planets and the stars and everything. It's so cool. So that was an awesome class.
In the astronomy, did they cover like the possibility of life on other planets or anything?
Yeah. They definitely mentioned it. They were not they weren't super I think the way, you know, we actually did talk about that, like creationism versus versus evolution and all that good shit. And the way I think they really tried to portray it was that God created the situation where evolution happened, and that you know, the whole days thing, the whole, you know, this was created this day and that was created that day, was is all symbolic. Like they were very okay with the idea of everything being symbolic. And, you know, that obviously, like, they still believe that God was the root of it,
mm-hmm.
but that, you know, evolution happened, but it happened, it started with God creating life and then it evolved, whatever. So they weren't that stubborn to think that, you know, that wasn't the case.
Okay. Because, you know, like, most of the time you hear, like, that, you know, like, the Catholic schools don't do that and, like, the real religious people in Texas that kind of decide what goes in, like, the science books have issues with how certain things are portrayed because it goes against supposedly what the Bible says and stuff like that. But it sounds like you went to a very progressive Catholic school, if that's a thing.
Yeah, I mean, they were, in some respects, they were very conservative. But when it comes to that kind of shit, like, they were, you know, they were forward thinking. And plus, I think that they knew that they weren't going to, like, even if any of them believed that, they weren't going to get away with telling us that to a bunch of young kids in the 2000s that actually happened. Like, this, you know, that God created the world in 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
go ahead.
You know, like, obviously, you know, kids question everything, you know, up through your high school years, and everyone's very suspicious about everything, and especially nowadays, like, they aren't going to get away with that anymore. Like, that's craziness. Even if they did believe it, they couldn't tell us that.
Yeah, I guess when you get to that size, because I feel like there are still some places that do that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and part of the thing is, you know, it's where we are, where we were. I mean, we're, like, right in Boston, and you know, in Massachusetts, and yeah, it's not quite the same as if you were in fucking North Dakota or something.
Yeah. Now, was your high school actually in? It was literally in Boston.
Yes.
So did you have to take a bus every day?
No, I took the subway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to? You had to walk from your parents' house to the.
I usually got a ride. My mom, on her way to work, would drop me at the T, and I would take the subway to school, and I'd walk from the train to school.
Cool. Not real far.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Which stop did your mom drop you off at?
North Quincy.
Okay. And then what was it on the Red Line?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I didn't have to switch.
Where was it?
It was right actually near JFK.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you only had to go like a couple blocks.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
That's cool.
Yeah. No, it was cool. It was I kind of enjoyed it. Like I've wanted to actually have a job where I get to take the subway to work. And then part of me says, "No, you really don't want to do that because taking the subway sucks." But I don't know. Maybe for a little while I'd enjoy it.
Hmm. Yeah,
No,
because where I live, both times it was too far. Basically, like I could walk to the T, but I have to get up like an extra like 40 minutes earlier.
Yeah. Oh, and you would have had to take the Orange Line too, wouldn't you?
Not from Somerville.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. No, because the Red Line.
Yeah.
Right.
They were talking about. I guess the whole time I was there, they were talking about extending one of the lines closer. I don't think it was the Red Line. I want to say maybe it was the Orange Line. I don't know. Closer to me, but I was like, that would be nice. But I guess they had been talking about that for years.
Yeah, by that point, you got to take the Orange Line, which is always a gamble, anyways. Yeah. Then you got to go to Downtown Crossing, and you got to switch to the Red Line. I mean, by the time you get to work, it'll be like an hour and a half later.
Yeah, if it was the Red Line, it'd be fine. But
yeah, see, that's the part that. As much as I say, oh yeah, I'd love to take the train. I mean, you know what? If it was a straight shot, yeah, sure, I'll take the train. But you know, I don't know. If I got to switch and you got to go on the lines with the creepy people, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if it had been closer to me, and it was a straight shot, like if I had lived closer to the Red Line, I probably would have done that.
Yeah. I don't know. You get on there, next thing you know, you're taking the Blue Line out to Wonderland, and it's no good. Yeah. For those who don't know, Wonderland is a dog track. It's not a made-up place.
Yeah.
I realized after I said that taking the Blue Line to Wonderland sounds weird, but it's not that.
Yeah, there really is a Blue Line, and there really is a Wonderland.
But it's just shady. It's not fun.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to remember if Pittsburgh has a subway system. I think they do.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone uses it, but...
Well, I'll have to go for a ride when I'm there. No, not actually. I don't want to just go ride the subway. I'm not five, but... Yeah, no. I don't know. I wouldn't really know, I guess.
Yeah, I just looked up. Yeah. Pittsburgh Light Rail... commonly known as the T.
Oh, okay. I can get used to that.
Yeah, it's a 26.2-mile light rail system.
Nice. Is it underground or is it all above?
You know, I don't know. I think it's mostly above ground.
Yeah. Hmm. That's still good, though, because... It's hard. I feel like if you really want your city's economy to do anything, you need that public transportation, and the bus just sucks.
Yeah,
the bus is terrible.
Buses are no good.
No, I mean the train can be shitty too. But all right, well, we don't have to check that out when I come out. But
we won't.
We do need to check out good drinking establishments and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And now we'll have another guest.
Oh, yes. We'll have another a guest for the podcast, our good friend Andrew. He'll be joining us. That'll be a treat. Yeah, we could call it a treat.
I'd call it a treat, yeah.
Yeah, we'll call it a treat. He's a good guy.
I think he has potential. I think he has potentially something to add to
the show. It'll be funny.
Does he listen? I don't know. You talk to him more. Does he listen regularly?
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
He may have grabbed an episode or two, but he should listen more if he's going
to
be on it.
Well, yeah, he should. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this one, though.
That's true. Otherwise, he can go fuck himself. And when I'm out there and he's there too, he can go take a walk around the block while we podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. He can go to the field across the street from my house.
Oh yeah, you got like the crops out there.
Yeah, he can just go hang out there.
Yeah, and you got that what's that up the street? Is it church? Yeah. Right, I kind of like went to sleep in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time I went out, I left early, and I made a bunch of pit stops, but I still showed up like an hour early, and it was a church up the street, and so instead of going to sleep, like pulling into Keith's driveway and like going to sleep, because I was like, the neighbors will probably think I'm weird or call the cops or something.
I don't know if I had neighbors at that point, but the neighbors, if I did have neighbors, there was no way they could judge you for that. But I don't think I did. The neighbors is something I want to talk about, but I want to get confirmation on my latest neighbors before I talk about them. So okay. Maybe we'll save that for when you guys are here. But go on with your story.
I think I'm just you know what? They probably wouldn't have given a shit. They're probably like, oh, it's just some guy sleeping in a car. But like where I'm from, everyone is just so suspicious of everything that you do that I was like, oh, they're gonna think I'm like some creepy murderer sleeping in a car waiting for Keith to get home. So it's like I found. Wait, what is it? A college or a church or whatever?
It's a college. I think the lot that you were sleeping in. Was must have been the church,
yeah. But
it's called St. Vincent College,
right? Yeah. So I went up there and I tried to go to sleep in that parking lot, and God, I was fucking beat, and I couldn't. I don't know. There was people getting out of their cars and driving by. It was very, it was busy for kind of a rural college, but it was you know, it served its purpose, and no one questioned me. I was happy about it.
Yeah, man. Well, they just figured, like, you were homeless, and they took mercy on you. One guy prayed and splashed water on there.
Look at this dickhead in the Sox cap sleeping in the car.
And they sounded exactly like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They sounded just like me.
It was a guy dressed as a monk saying, look at this dickhead sleeping in the car.
Sleeping in the car. Oh, but yeah, I am looking forward to coming out.
I'm looking forward to having you come out. It'll be good to have Andrew out here too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That means that there'll be three of us when we go out drinking, which means more high drinks.
I plan on more high drinks. I hope so.
You'll be better rested, so.
That's true too. I'm really excited about that because last time I came out, I was. I was just fucking dead tired the whole time, and it sucked. And, it was awesome. I had a great time, but, like, I couldn't stay up. Like, I think the latest I stayed up was maybe 1:30, 2 in the morning. That was, like, the first night.
Yeah.
And by the second night, I think I passed out at midnight. But now the fact that I'll be taking a plane and only take, like, an hour and 15 minutes to get there,
yeah,
I'll be good. We will be staying up all night, and the whiskey will be flowing.
Yes,
obviously.
I gotta remember to go to a liquor store before. I'm sure people really want to hear this, so I might cut this part out. Because liquor stores are closed on Sunday around here. Most of them are.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's one that's open on the highway, but they're open like 12 to 5. If we wanted to do stuff in Pittsburgh like that day, as soon as you guys come in,
yeah, we could hang out.
Like since we're there, if we wanted to go there, coming back, I don't know if we'd make it in time. So I have to remember to go the day before.
We will definitely need some booze.
Yeah, well, I'll get some provisions.
if you think that we're going to hang out with you without drinking, you've got another thing coming, sir.
Why would I think that?
So liquor stores are closed on Sunday, for the most part. They're closed on Sunday. Now, there's no issue, I'm assuming, with any restaurant serving alcohol on Sunday.
No.
So that's... It's funny, because we... Massachusetts is, despite being a quote-unquote liberal state, is not very, but pretty strict about that kind of shit, too, as far as selling booze. I don't think liquor stores can open till noon on Sunday. Maybe it's 11, and there's certain holidays, any holiday that has anything to do, like, religious-wise, no, the liquor stores are closed. I'm like, what the fuck? That's annoying. But it sounds like they're even a little more strict about it out there.
A little bit. Like I said, there's some that are open, I think, like, noon to 5.
Yeah.
But there's no problem with like going out to get a drink.
You know what? That sounds noon to 5. That's probably around similar.
Mm. I mean, I don't know what time places are open to.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? it's weird, especially like living in the northern states, and they have like these laws that go back to, probably the fucking 1700s. And then, like, you got some southern states or whatever, and it's like, yeah, liquor stores open 24/7. They sell hard alcohol at the gas station.
Yeah.
And it's like, and those are the conservative states, which they are, but it's funny just how that works.
So goodbye to our southern listeners.
Hey, I love the South.
No, I like it too. I mean, they're very friendly people.
I got a bunch of family in the South, and I spend a lot of time there. I do enjoy it. I love Texas.
I still got to get out there.
Yeah, you got to get to Texas. I love it.
Maybe I'll go with you one time.
You should. You should come down. One thing I've always, like, I've thought about moving there so many times, and I never have because of the heat. I just can't do it. I talk to my cousins, and it's just like, they're like, oh, yeah, well, this is the third week straight where every day has been over 100. I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I hate when it's over 75. There's no way I'm going 3 weeks on, triple digits. But I really do love it down there. And I know that if I ever wanted to, I can stay with any of them. Like, they're always like, oh, you should move down here. Get down to Texas. You can stay with me until you get on your feet or whatever. And I'm like, ugh, it's so tempting. But,
But then you just see that thermometer.
I just can't do it. Plus, I got so many. I can't leave everything. I'm just, I don't know. I'm a fat white man that hates change. What can I say?
So you don't think you'll ever end up leaving Boston area?
I don't know if I would leave here unless. I feel like it'd be one of those situations where maybe if I had the money, if I had enough money that I know I could come back on a whim, I would, where I wasn't stuck wherever I went. But I don't think I could move, like, say, move to Texas if I knew that there was no way I was getting back here in the next, year or two or more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I had enough money and I was, like, comfortable enough where I could move someplace and I know that I can come back and visit, pretty much anytime I wanted, then I could see myself doing it then. But,
you don't want to move and lock yourself in someplace.
Exactly. No way. Because I love it here. I really do. So, and I mean, there's plenty of other places I love. I love Texas, if I had the chance, if someone gave me the chance to live in Italy for a year, I'd totally do it. But I don't know if I'd do it just without the, knowing that it would be easy to come back.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of scares me. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, and I know what you're saying. I've moved around a bit, so I can kind of relate.
Yeah, and I haven't. I've always lived within, like, a fucking mile and a half radius, which is kind of disgusting.
but then again, I mean, you've gone places, so.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen places. You know, it's not like I don't know what's out there. You know, but at the same time, I kind of wish I lived someplace else. Not even necessarily outside of the Boston area, but just maybe moved out of my comfort zone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and I've been a few places. I haven't been too many places. I still haven't been on the West Coast. I mean, I've been to Nevada, but that's as far as I've been.
Yeah. I've only been to San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's coming up. I'll probably go to Seattle once my nephew's born.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to visit Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle's supposed to be awesome. I mean, San Francisco was really nice. I want to go to San Diego. Everybody says San Diego's, like, the greatest fucking place ever.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great shit about San Diego. And I honestly think it would be, you know, everyone's like, oh, the weather's, it's 80 degrees every day, blah, blah, blah. It's always nice and sunny. It's beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I like that, but I don't think it's got enough I don't know. I like my seasons. I like when it's fall and winter and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I could move where there's no seasons, but
no, like, I'm sure I'd enjoy it. Like, it's one of those things that, like, I would love to go to be in. I would go to San Diego for a week. I'd go for a month, you know, whatever. But at some point, I would definitely come back because I couldn't do that for that long. It would get boring to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to visit California, and then I'd like to visit Seattle. You know, I mean, a few other places out west, I guess. You know, of course, I'd go back to Las Vegas anytime, but that's for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
That's not really sightseeing. That's just for getting all sorts of nuts.
That was the place where you had all the sauerkraut and you went into the bathroom and you were throwing up with your buddy in the shower, right?
Yeah. It was at the we went to the Hofbräu and just ate just fucking spoonfuls of sauerkraut. It was disgusting. I mean, it was awesome, but it was ridiculous. And then I was throwing up in the middle of the night and he was just naked in the shower. The shower was going, just sitting there asleep.
Now, something that I thought about that I forgot to ask you, did you turn the shower off or did you just leave the shower on?
No, I left it going. He said he was fine. I nudged him.
Oh, you talked to him?
Yeah, no, I hit him and he was like, just go back to bed. Just go. I was like, all right.
Now, was it cold water or was it just like normal shower?
No, it was warm. Okay. You know, it was shower. Yeah, if it was cold, I think I would have. I mean, I was not in the right state either, but maybe not quite as bad as him. But no, if it was cold, I think I would have shut it off because I wouldn't want him to, you know, fucking die. But no, it was warm. Mm. He was okay. He looked to be enjoying himself.
He just had his hand on his dick.
He was erect, so I figured he was having a good time.
He kept saying, oh, candy. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it was a wild night. You know, sometimes, well, we were in Las Vegas, so.
But it wasn't the hangover bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I've had a few very bad nights in Las Vegas, but not like that. Sometimes you just gotta get so drunk you don't know where you are.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it's very easy there. The drinks flow.
Wow, how do we end up there?
I don't know. Where did we start?
We got
from Pittsburgh to Las Vegas.
I think this all started talking about religion. That's the messed up part.
You know, one time when I was in Vegas, I saw a guy. He was, I mean, I can only assume he was Muslim, and he had his little turban guy on and his robe or whatever, and he had a sign, and it said something like sex, booze, gambling, and whatever else leads to hell. Repent now or something. He's standing out on Fremont Street. And I was like, man, you really came to the right place. You came like that. The entire city exists only for those things.
Did you go up and talk to him? I would have gone up and been like, so have you gotten any takers? Like, has anybody come up and been like, I need to repent?
Well, he was handing out, he had little notes, little flyer things. There wasn't much. And I walked up to him and I was drinking like a 40 just out on the street. And I grabbed one from him, like, thank you. Just completely just annihilated. He probably thought I was a real dickhead, but whatever.
But yeah, you stood in front of the curb and you poured a little out and you turned to him and you were like, for the homies, you know?
Yeah. For you, my homie. Yeah. No.
I'll be seeing you later. Or maybe I won't. I don't know.
Yeah. I was keeping it classy because I was heading into a really fancy restaurant. You were keeping it classy
by drinking a 40.
Yeah.
Nothing says classy like malt liquor.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, no, because we went into this place. It was underneath the Four Queens on Fremont Street. And we had, every meal was like fucking $100 a plate almost. And my godfather, who is a recovered alcoholic, he orders me and his son, who's one of my best friends, he orders us Manhattans. And, I mean, it was just so much booze in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, by the time...
I think a Manhattan is just booze.
I'm
pretty sure a Manhattan's just booze. I'm pretty sure it's, I want to say it's bourbon, vermouth, and then bitters.
Yeah, you might be right. That sounds about right. And, yeah, he was like, I think he just, because he can't get drunk anymore, he just enjoys seeing other people get shit-faced. So we were drinking those, and, like, they bring a carafe over of it. So, like, each person you get, like, they just bring you a little carafe, and you get, like, 2.5 drinks out of it. And, I mean, I was just annihilated. So they come over, and they bring, I ordered, like, duck. And they're, like, flambéing it at the table, and I was just losing my mind. It was awesome.
The guy standing behind the fire, you're screaming that he's on fire.
Yeah. No, like, I turned around, and all of a sudden, just flame. I was like, holy shit. But it was, yeah, it was not a good place for me. It was a fancy enough restaurant where they give you, like, a sorbet in between your courses and stuff.
A little palate cleanser.
Yeah, yeah. Which I just was like, oh, it's Italian ice.
Please tell me you screamed that.
I think I said it to my father, and he's just like, oh, God.
Wait, your father or your godfather?
No, they were both there. Okay. They brought us. I was from the time I was like 17, 18, I was promised that for my 21st birthday, I would get brought to Las Vegas. And so that was it. And they brought me out and paid for all the hotel and the airfare and everything. I just had to pay for my gambling.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. I blew like a grand. But whatever, I was happy.
Yeah, as long as you have fun.
Yeah.
I think I've only ever been to like one casino.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really. I think we talked about it before. I don't really have the urge to go to a casino and gamble. Maybe if I had more money.
You know, I could go to the casino a lot more than I do. I mean, I'm not that far from Foxwoods. I mean, you know, it takes like 45 minutes to get there, but really that's not very far. But I never go. I mean, I go only when there's like a special event or whether, you know, if there's people that I know are going and like, oh, hey, we're going to go for someone's birthday. I've literally probably been to Foxwoods maybe 4 or 5 times. And, you know, I'm 26, so I mean, maybe not even that. I would say 4 times tops. So, like, I don't really go to the casino that often, but when I do go, I enjoy myself. And especially when I get to, like, that craps table. I just have a hard time pulling myself away, but
I feel like I gotta go to. I've never been to Vegas, and I think we talked. I think I talked about this too. We gotta go to Vegas sometime. And I feel like I should go before. I feel like I should try to go if I have the money before I'm like 30, because I feel like after 30, I'll feel like I can't act like a jackass.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you're like 29 or less, you can go and act like a complete dick and still kind of get away with it. Honestly, you can do it older than that too, but you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I just meant for my own sanity. And just shame.
I mean, the thing is like Vegas is designed for everyone to just to. It's just you do the things there that you can't do anywhere else. And like, yeah, you're right. Like, you should be responsible and act your age, but it's one of the few places where you can go and just not care. Because I mean, really, the thing is that everyone is there doing the same thing. Like, everyone's there for the same exact reason. They're being irresponsible. They're going to strip clubs. They're getting way too drunk. You know, they're gambling their fucking savings away. Like, everyone's there for the same shit. So, like, you never feel like you're really being judged. Because it's like, oh, well, yeah, I'm being kind of a loser, but you know what? You're a fucking degenerate, too, so shut up. And it's just fun. Like, it's great. Like, it's an entire just fucking city based on just entertainment. It's weird. It's such a weird experience.
All right. Well, if I get the money, I'll go before I'm 30.
If you get the money, you let me know, because I will go with you.
Well, yeah, that's the only way I would go.
We'll have to go to the Hofbräuhaus.
I just dish out on sauerkraut.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, who else am I going to go with and act like an asshole?
Well, that's true.
Am I going to take my mom?
Hey, Colleen, let's go to the Hofbräuhaus. Oh, yeah. But, you know, what's great about Vegas, too, though, is that you can... Really, you get some awesome deals, though. I mean, like, last time I went out, I stayed for, like, it was either 3 or 4 nights with airfare for $400. It's like, you can get out and stay so cheaply just because they know you're going to spend the money once you get out there.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not a burden to go. It's just, you know, you got to watch yourself once you get out. I wouldn't go unless you plan on spending a grand, though.
All right.
Just, you know. Just the word to the wise.
You're talking spending a grand on just gambling?
No, I mean in total.
Okay.
You know, or at least I would say you can get away with spending $200 a day. But you gotta be careful. Because food is not cheap.
No. I would imagine not.
No. No, at least the booze comes with the gambling. But you gotta be playing.
So unrelated to all of this, and I feel kind of weird bringing it up, because it's about the passing of somebody who believe it or not, Greg, is very important to both of us, to both of our lives.
Oh, good.
You're very fearful of this right now.
I have no idea what you're gonna say.
Well, he was 92, so that crosses out some things. No, this happened on Sunday, and I didn't see, I think Sunday or maybe late Saturday, and I didn't hear anybody really cover it, but I thought it was somebody very cool. Howard H. Scott, a developer of the LP.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think he would have still been alive.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was old.
But yeah, 92. Pretty old. But I have his little obituary here from the New York Times. And the thing that got me, I was like, nobody like really wrote articles about it last couple days.
No, I...
Like, I was looking at it... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you mentioning it right now is the first I've heard.
Yeah, like, it's not covered on news or anything, but this guy basically, like, changed music. Or helped change music, I should say. Because he was part of the team, but... So I figured, since we had talked about vinyl before, a couple times before, I figured, you know, this might be an appropriate time to pay a little tribute.
Definitely.
So Howard H. Scott, and this is by Ben Cesario. Howard H. Scott was part of the team at Columbia Records that introduced the long-playing vinyl record in 1948, before going on to produce albums with the New York Philharmonic, Glenn Gould, Isaac Stern, and many other giants of classical music. He died on September 22nd, so this is even longer ago, in Reading, Pennsylvania. He was 92, and they said the cause was cancer. And this is kind of his background here, how he got started. In 1946, he was 26 and just discharged from the Army when he got a job at Columbia Masterworks, the label's classical division. He was soon assigned to Columbia's top secret project, developing a long-playing record to replace the 78 disc, which could hold only about 4 minutes of music on each brittle shellac side. Now, have you ever seen a 48?
I have, yes. From my grandparents had one.
Mm-hmm. Did they just have one?
To be honest, I don't remember.
Okay. Well, I got a few of them. I think I have, and I'm working on trying to actually copy them over into digital right now, because I got them from my mom's uncle, who actually wasn't like her uncle, but he was like a real good friend of the family, and they just called him uncle.
Right.
But he had 78s, and there's one song that when you're here, I'm gonna play for you, and I want to discuss it a little bit, because it is a song that I can't believe exists. And could never be played today, I don't think.
All right, awesome.
So that's a little teaser for the future. But yeah, they were one song, and then they were just. It says brittle, and I mean they are pretty delicate. Like besides having like scratches and some minor warps in them, like the ones that I have are actually missing like little chips on the sides.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just from age, really. I mean, just from use.
Normal wear and tear, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny, you think about it, and they're like, well, I imagine it really would be like a top secret project to develop something longer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, at that point, it's like, you don't want that to get out, because, you know, then everyone will be making them.
Yeah.
You want to be the first one.
Whoever develops this is developing gold.
Yeah.
The project had begun in 1940 and was nearing completion, but its engineers needed someone with musical training, particularly the ability to read orchestral scores. Orchestral.
I think it's orchestral.
That's why I was thinking too, orchestral. Scores to help transfer recordings from 78s to the new discs, which played at 33 and a third. And could hold about 22 minutes on a side and were made of more durable vinyl. Howard Hillison Scott, that's his middle name, Hillison, which is unusual. I guess it's a family name. He fit the bill. He was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut in 1920. He graduated from the Eastman School of Music in 1941 and had just begun graduate piano studies at Juilliard when he was drafted the next year. Back in civilian life, in July 1946, he was hired by Columbia as a trainee. In the days before magnetic tape came into wide use, the process of transferring music to new discs, soon to be known as LPs, was complex. Long pieces of music split among multiple 78 records needed to be stitched together on the new discs without interruption. So I guess if you had, you know, like the Beethoven Symphony or something, it was spread out across multiple 78s.
Yeah, okay. Oh man, that must have been such a pain in the ass.
So they had to figure out how to stitch it together onto the LPs, but I guess now they do it with magnetic tape. Or they did it with like the reel to reel players. But when they started actually doing the LPs.
Right.
To that, Mr. Scott and his colleagues lined up overlapping segments of music on 78s, and with Mr. Scott snapping his finger in coordination, switched the audio signal at just the right moment from one turntable to the other. As the industry began to use magnetic tape beginning in the late 1940s, such work was no longer necessary. So that was actually like his huge contribution, and it seems small, but apparently nobody else could do it.
Huh.
Is he would just go
his musical training back his background there.
Yeah, he would just go he would just snap along with the music and then he would actually have to just switch it over to transfer it.
Wow.
As a staff producer at Columbia, Mr. Scott worked on hundreds of recordings by most of the major orchestras of the United States, including those of Boston, Cleveland, Philadelphia, St. Louis, and Cincinnati, in addition to the New York Philharmonic. He had a particularly close association with Gould, beginning with his historic recording of Bach's Goldberg Variation in 1955. That sentence is lost on me. Do you know Bach's Goldberg Variation?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, at least now I don't feel like the stupid one, because we're both stupid in that.
I thought you'd say, because you're the stupid one.
I do know. I was just tricking you. It's a real finger snapper tune.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's real, real upbeat.
Mr. Scott left Columbia in 1961 and worked at MGM Records, RCA Red Seal, the publisher G. Shermer, and the Rochester Philharmonic, where he was executive manager in the 1970s. He won a 1966 Grammy Award as the producer of the Classical Album of the Year, Charles Ives Symphony No. 1, performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Morton Gould conducting on RCA Red Seal.
Uh-huh.
From 1986 until his retirement in 1993, Mr. Scott worked for Sony, Columbia's corporate successor, as a producer, once again transferring old albums to a new format, the CD. In addition,
oh, really? He did that too?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess he was overseeing that.
That's crazy.
I guess, but would he have to? Well, no, I guess he would. His timing would almost be needed for that, because it only holds 22 minutes on one side of an LP. And then a CD is what can be, what, like 70 minutes?
80, I think.
80? All right, that seems about right. I'll buy that. So, I mean, some like symphonies are usually longer than that. Aren't they? I don't know. I'm, again, not a classical expert.
I'm not either. I don't know. I feel like I want to say like an hour and a half, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like some of them at least would go for longer than that, but I feel like now we really should have gotten an expert for this episode.
Or at least read up something.
Probably. In addition to his daughter, Mr. Scott is survived by his son, John, two sisters, and two granddaughters. In a 1998 interview with the New York Times on the 50th anniversary of the introduction of the LP, Mr. Scott remarked about the durability of the format and took note of a small renaissance taking root at the time. And this is a quote from him. They lived from 1948 to 1978 when the CD came in. Now they're back. Small companies are issuing them. I'm still an LP fan.
Hmm.
So how crazy is that, though? You start off your career creating something from the past, like recreating something from the past, or taking these 78 to LP. You see it rise and just do this huge boom and create all this music, and you know, and expand the music industry in huge ways, because a lot of it wouldn't be possible, I don't think, without the LP.
Right.
But then you see it start to die out. But then before you die, you see it resurge again, and people take another interest in it.
Well, I think what's truly amazing is that he, with the fact that he worked on transferring everything to CD, it's almost like he pretty much created this new format, or helped popularize the new format, which I guess he says was his favorite, and then he helped to kind of kill it and then see it kind of come back. It was like he killed his own creation, only to see it kind of come back a little bit in the end.
Well, yeah. I don't know how much he did on
the CDs
on killing. Yeah, because it's just a kind of a smaller note. But I guess he did help with transferring it, so we did. He was kind of putting a nail in the coffin, so to speak.
It's just weird. It's almost like writing a book and then writing another one later to disprove yourself, or to outdo what you already did and make it not as worthwhile. You know,
it's like doing Terminator 3 and undoing everything that came before.
Yeah. The fate is what you make. Oh, nope. Sorry. Yeah, so fate is not what you make. You can't change the future. We're stupid.
So Mr. Scott helped make Terminator 3, and then he saw the resurgence of the other ones. But I think that's cool that he got to see like people start to appreciate it again before he died. And that was an interview from 1998, and it's come back in a much bigger way than before.
Oh yeah, I think that was probably. I mean, you say like late 90s was probably the very beginning of people starting to go back and listen to vinyls, and now it's much bigger. I mean, people, you know, you saying, yeah, if you said in the late 90s, oh yeah, no, I prefer listening to shit on vinyl, people be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you out of your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Now you say it and people are like, oh yeah, no, I have a few, or yeah, no, my buddy's really into vinyl, or, you know, people get it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and obviously MP3s are just 1,000 times more convenient than, you know, any physical medium, but that having been said, I still prefer the sound quality of a vinyl over anything.
Yeah, because there's no compression, really.
Exactly. CDs are a second, and then it's just after that, you know, whatever.
I've never heard one. I would like to hear the sound quality on 8-track. Because I hear people make that dumb joke, and they're like, "Oh, give me back 8-tracks too." And I'm like, "I did they actually sound good? I feel like they won't. I don't know. Because I've seen one.
I worked at a radio station in college, and that's right. we had an 8-track player. We did not use them to play music. What we use them is to play like liner notes and stuff, mm-hmm. or intros and everything. And we would record them on the 8-tracks and play them. And it was a way that we could have all our CDs queued up and our MP3s queued up, but still play our liners on command. It was weird, but that's how we did it. And the quality was not that bad. Honestly, I think it was better than cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm. I used to have like cassette tapes, but I've never. It's been a long time since I've listened to any of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me, I think cassette tapes are by far the worst. Is sound quality wise, definitely the worst. 8-tracks are better than them. MP3s better, obviously, mm-hmm. and then probably CDs, and then vinyls.
Well, what I remember about cassettes, and partially why the sound sucked so much, was because unless you were blasting it, no matter how, if you were just trying to turn it down, if you were trying to have it kind of low, or just like enough so like in your bedroom you could hear it, and it wasn't bothering like everybody else in the house, because otherwise you would get yelled at. You could still hear the motor turning the cassette.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like you had to
blast it in order to not hear the whirring of the motor.
Oh, yeah, and you could almost like I felt like sometimes if you were listening on headphones, you could like almost hear it like in the headphones too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. Maybe I imagined it, but I felt like you could almost hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, tapes were the worst, and the, every time you listen to it, the sound would just get worse and worse, and they were so bad, and they were inconvenient too. Like, it's not like for instance, MP3s have a lesser sound quality than CDs.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're more convenient. But like, tapes are terrible sound quality and less convenient than, I mean, they're small, that's it. But as far as like actually listening to them, they're not that convenient.
No, because to listen to them, you have to have a Walkman.
Yeah, and you got to fast forward, you got to rewind. I mean, it's just, they were such a pain in the ass. I hated tapes. Even at the time, I was like, fuck tapes. These are stupid.
The only thing that they would have been good for was making mixtapes.
Yeah.
But did you ever make a mixtape?
Yeah, yeah. When I was pretty young, I did.
I did when I was really young. I figured out how to make one. But by the time I got old enough where I would do like the, I'm going to make a mixtape for a girl, I was kind of already done with it, but I had yet to, like, CDs were already the thing, but I don't think the technology really had come out yet, or it wasn't like affordable enough. So like, it was in every computer automatically, you know, where you could make like a mix CD.
Right, yeah, because I don't think burning CDs really came out until we were like, I don't know, I'd say it's like late middle school, maybe like freshman year high school, when everyone started kind of being able to burn their own CDs.
Yeah, but like I don't think it was until college, and I was actually seriously dating a girl, and it was until I got to college that I actually made a mixtape or a mix CD.
Yeah.
But it was like, it wasn't like a hey, I'm like interested in you in like an 80s movie kind of way that I made you this mixtape and look how cute it is. It was like, oh, I'll make you a CD and some songs and stuff. It's like when I first did it for a girl.
I want you to like the music I like. And if you don't like it, then you're not right for me.
Well, I think that's what it used to be.
I think it was too. It's like, hey, do you like older music? Do you like the Beatles?
I thought you were going to say, do you like older music? You know, Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller.
Yeah, you should listen to this. And then they come back and they're like, yeah, I didn't really like it. And you're like, well, fuck you.
But I mean, did you ever make a mixtape for a girl or mix CD for a girl that you were like kind of interested in?
Honestly, not that I remember. I'm sure I did. I feel like I probably did, but I don't remember it specifically.
Yeah, I really don't think I did ever. If I did, it was so traumatic that I blocked it out.
Wow.
I either put such bad songs on there and was ostracized for my choices of music because she did not like Peter Frampton. Not that I probably put Peter Frampton on there.
You just love that Squawk Box.
It's fantastic. It was nothing but side A was Peter Frampton, side B was Peter Gabriel. It was phenomenal, but side C was actually Donny Osmond. And then I rounded it out with side D, that was Air Supply. And it was a double cassette mixtape that I made for this girl, and it did not go well.
No?
No, I had to change schools because of it.
You've changed schools? What a jackass.
Because I said that, or because I actually did it, but I didn't?
No, you're just a jackass.
Just a jackass.
I know that you didn't.
I bet you somebody out there did, though.
Oh, I'm sure.
And his name was probably Peter Gabriel. He's like, I'll hide my stuff in the middle so that she doesn't know.
I'll just always be living in Phil Collins' shadow.
Actually, it was a mixtape he made for Phil Collins. He left it on the doorstep and rang the doorbell, ran away, and Phil Collins just threw it out. He never listened.
Phil Collins walked out the door and stepped on it.
Well, he made the mistake of putting it in a little brown paper bag, so he just thought it was a pile of shit.
He just started stomping it out.
Ugh. Hey, somebody left his cassette tape in a bag. Oh, well.
Crunch. Yeah, it doesn't feel like poop. Oh, well.
Speaking of, speaking of vinyl, I think we'll have some adventures with vinyl when you're out here. And in a musical sort of way, not a weird gay sort of way.
Adventures in Vinyl, starring Keith and Greg and their penises.
And their friend Andrew.
Watches Keith shaves Andrew's pubic hair while they listen to vinyl.
What song would go well with that? I don't even know. But put on some old Glenn Miller albums.
I was going to say Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel.
Well, there you go. I don't think I have any Peter Gabriel. We'll have to look for it at the record store while we're out.
Awesome. I'll bring the Lady Gillette. Oh, well.
Well, at least we have a title for this episode.
I'll bring the Lady Gillette.
No, Adventures in Vinyl.
Oh, Adventures in Vinyl. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Even though most of this episode had nothing to do with vinyl.
No, I mean it popped in a couple times.
But we talk about so many things that I have no idea what to.
I don't even remember what we talked about.
This is why I have a hard time explaining to people what our topic is.
It just really, I think we started with me going to Catholic high school.
Also called Adventures in Vinyl. Our version is the remake.
Ugh, I'm sure it's terrible.
What's terrible?
Our remake.
You mean the remake that we're not doing?
Yeah, but that we're doing the podcast about.
Oh, we're doing the podcast about the... Okay.
About the non-existent remake.
Okay, so there's a movie about you going to Catholic high school called Adventures in Vinyl that we're remaking as a podcast where we don't really talk about it.
Yeah, there's also going to be a music video, but we haven't cut that together yet.
I was really hoping that you were going to say musical and that there's going to be the musical version Adventures in Vinyl.
Yeah, I'm not really into musicals.
Starring the kid from Harry Potter as Greg.
Yeah, I guess he could play me. You'd be played by fucking Draco Malfoy.
All right.
That little prick.
All right, I'm good with that. And the priest is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, perfect. He can be creepy.
And the nun will be played by Mila Kunis.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
We gotta make this happen.
Yeah, that's a hot nun.
They'll also... And your character's mom will be played by Barbara Streisand.
Can my father be played by Robert Urich?
Yes. No.
Except they... No, he can't because he's fucking dead.
Is there a Robert Urich lookalike that we can hire?
I'm sure there's some guy out there that looks like Robert Urich.
I wonder if there's a guy that advertises himself as a Robert Urich lookalike.
That'd be awesome. What a gig that would be. Really not much of a gig at all.
We should hire him to run into your mom.
Oh, God. I don't want my mother to have a heart attack and die. Oh, guess who I saw? It was Robert Urich.
Mommy's dead. You know, he knew me.
Oh.
He called me Sue.
He called me Toots.
He called me Lady. he asked if I was with my sister. It was really my mother. It was so entertaining.
Oh, what a charming guy.
Maybe I should cut out our return to Robert Urich as your mom. I mean, I'll leave in that we reference that he's going to play your dad.
Okay.
All right. Who plays my parents?
Nice.
Let's see. Who would play my mom?
Your mom?
Yeah. Bette Midler? Bette Midler.
I don't know. I don't know your mom.
Bette Midler would be my mom. And, I've never met your mom, and I said Barbara Streisand would be your mom, so we're not really going based off.
That's true.
Actual reality.
I guess this is not much, this isn't really rooted in reality.
Yes, let's see, my father, you could play my father. You know, it would be good. We get the Robert Urich lookalike to play your dad, and then my dad is played by Avery Brooks. Even though I'm not a biracial child.
See, I think my dad should be played by the bad guy in Dumb and Dumber. The guy that's trying to kill them for the first half of the movie and who dies from the ulcer. That should be my dad.
All right.
If we want to be accurate.
But what kind of fun is accurate?
Yeah, that's true.
This is now because
we're talking about the Harry Potter guy playing me. So
yeah, and Draco Malfoy's playing me.
No, that is accurate.
Just a blonde chooch.
Yeah, whatever.
We don't know who's playing my dad. I don't know.
Ed Norton.
Ed Norton. So my parents are played by Ed Norton and Bette Midler.
Yeah, that's a hell of a duo. Good thing there's no age difference in between them.
You know what, though? I would see that movie.
No, I would go see it.
Actually, you know who I would want to play my dad is...
Burt Reynolds.
No, Roth. Tim Roth.
Oh, Tim Roth. Mr. Orange.
Just to see him act, I would like him to play my...
Uh-huh.
So him and Bette Midler, me and my parents.
It just sounds like a dysfunctional household.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's that's where the adventures come in.
And then hilarity ensues.
And then we'll throw Elizabeth Shue in, because she's always good.
Oh, you love her.
she makes everything better. It's a fact, all right, Gregory? It's a fact.
I'll take it.
Name one bad thing Elizabeth Shue has done.
Everything.
I tend to disagree. I mean, I don't know what she's been doing lately, but...
I'm sure it's nothing. Or nothing good.
You know what? I'm just looking. You might be right.
What, that she's doing nothing?
No, she's doing nothing good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, either way.
In 2010, she did Piranha 3D.
Ugh, okay, yeah. So she's doing nothing good.
Yeah, so... and I forgot she was in Hollow Man.
Ooh, well, so it wasn't Kevin Bacon.
Did you know that you can now Google search the Bacon game?
Oh, no, I haven't. I'll have to do that.
Yeah, you just do Bacon number and then type in an actor's name, and Google will let you know how many degrees it is.
Okay. Oh, I will have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a good 2-3 minute killer.
Thank you.
Whatever you do, though, don't put in Bacon number Kevin Bacon, because it creates a paradox and then the world ends.
All right, well, get ready for that, because I'll be doing it later.
All right, so we'll wrap up today's episode of But You're Wrong. I'm Keith Bodela.
I'm Greg Giannicola.
And join us in, what do you think, spring 2014 for the Adventures in Vinyl musical?
Yeah, I think that's a realistic date.
All right. All right, everybody. We'll see you then. We're opening off Broadway. Off Broadway.
So is that Cleveland?
It's actually in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. So
awesome.
Actually, no, it's in like Lancaster. We're doing it in an Amish barn.
Oh,
it'll be fantastic.
And we're not shoveling the manure out.